Yo, what's up, everyone? Thanks for tuning in to episode 111 of the Davidson Hang podcast. I have with me Liam Mercier, who is an enterprise BDR slash SDR at Gong, which is a fast growing, booming company. I personally love using Gong. I love listening to my calls because I feel like it makes me better. And sometimes I just like looking at like the talk ratios and just some of the things just to make sure that I'm listening more. But yeah, man, excited to have you on the podcast.
Hey, super, super happy to be here. Super honored to be here as well. So, you know, what do you want to know about me, man?
Yeah. I think you have like a really interesting background. I think, you know, you're a musician, like you like playing the guitar, you're a DJ, like, you know, and then also would love to get into like FlockJ, because I think a lot of folks have like asked about like, hey, is this something I should choose? But yeah, would love to just like dig a little bit deeper into why you decided to pursue a career in sales, and why do you think like not more like Asians like really get into sales, like in general? Like it does, when I met you, I was like, oh man, there's like just not that many of us, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So a little background info for any of Davidson's listeners. We met through a Slack group. It's called the Society of Asians in Sales and Success. And Davidson reached out to me, which I was super thankful for, because I mean, this community is pretty small as a whole, just in terms of sales, but even smaller when you're looking at just Asians. So this is actually my first business development role. So I feel like fish out of water, and I'm still learning daily. And so I really appreciated Davidson reaching out to me. So do you want to kind of start in terms of just like, I guess, how I got into sales?
Yeah. And on that note, thank you, Linda. Lynn, you're awesome. You're amazing. Thanks for putting together like such cool programming. So if anyone wants to join the Society of Asians in Sales and Customer Success, say that three times fast. But if you want to join, it's a great group. You can find us on Meetup. I'll post a link to the Slack group and the LinkedIn group as well, so we can stay in touch. But it's been a phenomenal resource for anyone who is looking, like the next programming we have is next week about negotiation, negotiating offer letters and sales compensation. So I think that's such a value add. But yeah, I'm so glad that we met through that.
Yeah, totally. Like I said, you want me to kick us off? Just tell you a little bit about how I got into sales?
Yeah, I would love to learn a little bit more about FlockJ, because I have seen that like it's growing, and so like a lot of people reach out to me and they say like, hey, like, is this something I should be pursuing? Like what are your thoughts on like the best way to break into tech sales?
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. That's exactly how I was feeling when I found FlockJ. And I think that's the great thing about sales, is that everyone's kind of journey into sales is a little bit different. So prior to working here at Gong, I was working in clothing retail industry. So I was working for a company called Rourke. I helped them open their first store in Berkeley. Retail clothing was really all that I knew in terms of my sales experience. That being said, you know, I really enjoy the craft of sales, and I wanted to take that a step further, take that into the business-to-business space as well. And then I stumbled upon FlockJ. Honestly, I was looking into like graduate programs, and I didn't know if going back to school was the best decision for me. And also just in terms of timing, all of this coincided with like right around when COVID hit. So thankfully, I looked a little bit into FlockJ, saw this article, Serena Williams backed it, which definitely grabbed my attention. So shout out to their marketing. And I think they do a really great job in kind of just introducing you to the world of sales with a very low barrier for entry, in the sense that you can try this program out. And if it's not for you, you can leave. They have a really flexible payment structure as well, which is also what got me. So really, I think kind of like what their main mission statement is, which I think sets it apart from something like an SV Academy or a Vendition. It's really this focus on diversity and inclusion. So they're really trying to change the landscape of what tech looks like, because I'm sure, as everybody knows across the board, there's a lack of diversity. And so I really commend FlockJ for taking action there. So just in terms of my own cohort or class, I was surrounded by many people who looked like me, many people who didn't. We all came from different walks of life, different work experiences. Some people were servers, some were musicians. And I think that really made me feel comfortable, and definitely attributed to my success in the program.
That's awesome. And I mean, this is probably a tough question to answer, but like, what's a day in the life like as a SDR/BDR, right? Because I do think, you know, there's obviously like tremendous upside being in tech sales, but you know, there's also, it's not so easy, right? So would love like an honest like truth of like what a day in the life looks like for you.
Yeah, so it's kind of strange because, again, being this is my first BDR role, I don't really know any different. Like, I never got to step foot in the office. So that,
yeah,
it was like a challenge and a blessing, right? Because I love the fact that I don't have to commute and I can really kind of define my own day. But especially when you're first starting out, I mean, time management is clearly key in sales. And it's easier said than done to try and figure that out when no one's there over your shoulder holding you accountable. So my day-to-day has definitely changed from when I first started to now. Now I feel like I have a really dialed in process. You know, I'm an early riser. So I'll wake up, you know, 5:30, 6 a.m., go on a run because I like to get outside. Since you're usually sitting at the desk all day, I think that's super important to stay balanced. And then once I get back, that's usually where I'll knock out a couple emails, just, you know, see if there's anything urgent I need to reply to. And then it's straight to the phones. So usually from like 9:30 to 11, kind of have a informal call block. I highly suggest inviting some of your coworkers so you're not just doing it alone as well. We just open up a Zoom session. Usually I'll get my dials out in the morning, head out for lunch, maybe do a little bit more dialing when I get back, or some more kind of like mindless tasks like prospecting. But it's pretty much the same day to day. And I'm sure that'll evolve as well as I get better at the job.
That's awesome. And I know Gong is a pretty fast growing company. Like, what's it like to work for a company that like, it seems like is like a rocket ship, and it just, you know, not everyone has that experience to work for a company that is at the forefront of, you know, many things, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it's humbling, it's exciting, it's pretty much like everything that you could imagine in that sense. I feel super blessed to be working for a company like Gong. I think everything from the company culture to the product that we sell, you know, is first rate in that sense. Like, we actually just announced that our guest for the Celebrate event is going to be Magic Johnson. We got to hear from Angela Duckworth at our sales kickoff. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible working for Gong. You know, speaking to like the work side of things, it really pushes you to be your best. I mean, I recognize that I'm surrounded by the best in the business and I have a lot to learn, but I also feel comforted by, I can reach out to any one of my teammates and I know they're an amazing resource.
That's awesome. Yeah, I feel very similarly at LinkedIn, right? Like, it's like, when you're surrounded by greatness and everyone is a high achiever, right? Like, you went to BC, so clearly like, you know what that's like being surrounded by smart people, but it's even at like a different like level, like in the workforce where like everyone's on top of their game, right? It's just like, you can tell that like a lot of these people will become something great, or if not already, but like, you can see that, you know, it's just cool to kind of be, I feel like it's almost like an incubator where like, you're like, okay, like, yeah, I could see that they're going to go really far. You know, like there's like 21-year-olds that are just like way further in life than I was, you know, at their age.
I fully resonate with that. There's a couple people on my team. I think like one of them just turned 25. Shout out to you, Amartio. Happy birthday, dude. There's another one. I think he's maybe even a year younger than that. I'm just thoroughly impressed by the talent that Gong brings in. Also just wanted to add, at the same time, I think it's one thing to be surrounded by smart people. It's another thing to be surrounded by people who don't like take themselves so seriously. And they're also humble in their own right. Because like, I think sales gets a bad rap as being pretty cutthroat, and obviously we all want to win, but I think like one of our operating principles is win as a team. And I think that makes us that much more successful.
I love that. I think it's, you know, I think sometimes like people think that like salespeople are like cocky. I do think in general, like, it does have a bad reputation for whatever, whether it's like Wolf of Wall Street or whatever, you know, the media says, but I do think inherently like salespeople want to help out their customers. Like, they want to add value. They want to be, you know, a resource. Right. And I'm not sure. I think it's shifting, right. As people tend to be, because now in the information age, like, people are going to do research and they're going to know more about you and the product than like in the past, where like you were the only source of the truth. Right. So it's, you know, what you say like carries a lot of weight, whereas like now it's more just building that genuine relationship and them trusting you enough that like, hey, like, he's got my back. Like, he's not just trying to like oversell me. He's like actually looking after my needs.
Yeah, I mean, I fully agree with that. I think the information age, like for better and for worse, has definitely changed the landscape of sales. We have to try that much harder to cut through the noise. But I think it also just goes to show that being authentic is the best way to sell something. And you'll quickly see if you're just sending out mass emails that are disingenuous, like you're not going to hit quota.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the world of technology, we need to be more authentic and more personalized and more customized, right? As people can tell if it's like you're just mass blasting or if it's like, oh, you took the time to at least look at my profile and at least read up and do some due diligence about my company, right? I think easier said than done.
Yeah, 100%.
That's awesome. And so I know that, you know, you have had, like, you moved around a lot and, you know, I would say you've experienced a lot for like someone like relatively young. You know, what propels you to kind of like move to a different state or just experience like all these different things? Like why do you think you're so like curious and like, you know, going outside your comfort zone?
Yeah, I think, you know, like most people, like this changes over time. So growing up, I always wanted to be a musician. And I grew up on the west coast of Florida, beautiful beaches. But at the same time, I was looking forward to experiencing something a little bit different. And to make it in music, you had to move to a big city. So I thought for the longest time, I'd end up in LA, New York, or Miami. For whatever reason, I ended up going to school in Boston. And, you know, I'm glad that I did. Still exposed me to the city, showed me that I really don't like the cold. And for that reason, that's why myself and my partner, we moved out to the Bay Area. We also had a close friend who was from Cupertino as well and was definitely like, go to NorCal, not SoCal. So, you know, just in that spirit of, you know, just packing the car and leaving, that's how we ended up here. You know, I think just in terms of taking risks and trying new things as well, that's something that my parents have always been really great at instilling with me. It's like, try whatever you want, do what you love, but just give it 100%.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's so cool. And I don't know if you're like open to sharing more about this, right? But can you share a little bit? Because I do think like, if your parents is someone who's kind enough to like, you know, adopt a child, like they must have like a pretty big heart, right? So what would you say like are some of the things you learned from your parents other than what you just shared with us about the 100%?
Well, my parents are just like incredibly good people. And then I think an extension of that is like your family doesn't have to look like you. So I think like the most common question that people who are adopted get are like, you know, do you miss your real parents? Do you know your real parents? Do you want to look for them? All of those are super valid questions. They're definitely things that are on my mind, like, you know, even today. But at the same time, it's like your parents, like my adopted parents, just feel like my normal parents. You know, it doesn't feel any different. And maybe that's just because I was adopted at such an early age. But through that, I just think the amount of love that they've shown me and just support overall has really shaped me to who I am. And that's probably the reason that I'm the way that I am now.
That's great. It's interesting because you know, one of my good friends, like she unfortunately like she went through the foster like program and she adopted someone, but then it was for a couple of years, but then she had to like give it back to I'm not really sure like what the details were, but like she had like such a big heart. And you know, I'm sure it was like really hard for her to like, you know, give the two children back, right? But I saw like the overwhelming amount of love and joy that she had. And like, it was such like a beautiful experience. But yeah, I feel like not a lot of people like kind of talk about that, like this experience, right? Like, I don't know too many like people who've been adopted that like openly share about this, right? It's almost kind of like a, I don't know, but like taboo is the right word, but it's just like not, there's just not too many conversations about this, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think that also nails it on the head in terms of there's just a lack of conversation. So typically you're either speaking with other adoptees and then that circle is very small in itself, or you're talking with other people who kind of have their own like preconceived notions about like what being adopted means. And so you feel like you're taking on the role of educating, which like I'm more than happy to do. But I have some really close friends here and they're thinking about adopting kids. And I feel like that was more of a conversation that people would have.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like the stigma still needs to be like broken down. But yeah, I'm even talking about it now is something new for me, to be totally honest.
Yeah,
I haven't had that many people ask and just be open to having a conversation.
Yeah, I think the reason why I'm so curious is because I guess, I mean, I was fortunate enough that my dad was around most of my life, right? But when he left, I was like devastated. Like I was like, he was dead to me. Like I was just like, I wouldn't even invite you to my wedding, you know? And, you know, growing up with that much hatred, it's like, it's definitely not healthy, you know? And you don't know, like, I don't know what actually happened, right? Like his parent, like his dad was not around, and it's like intergenerational like trauma, right? So I can't blame him because he's just doing what he knows, which is that his dad wasn't around, right? And especially like in Vietnamese culture, like masculine culture, like they, I guess it's bad to say this. And this is like back then, right? So I'm sure things have changed. But the male was kind of like allowed to kind of do whatever he wants, right? Like he, you know, like he brought in the money, like he was able to kind of be promiscuous, and it was kind of accepted in back in the day. You know, I think I'm sure it's changed a lot since then, but from what I hear, like there's still some aspect of that. But I guess that's why I'm curious, because you know, I just released a book called Redefining Masculinity. So these are like the things I often think about a lot.
Yeah, and I want to say congratulations on the book. I actually just ordered it, so I'm looking forward.
Thanks, man. It's awesome. But yeah, so thanks for sharing about that. I think it's cool to see that people are more open about these uncomfortable conversations, because I think that there's so many people that want to adopt, right? Like I even consider it at some point, you know, because I just think that, you know, yeah, like for instance, like I volunteer with the Orphans Future Alliance. So we help orphans in Vietnam, and there's like a lot of orphans in Vietnam that have been abused, molested, and just all sorts of things. So we put together like a mentorship program where they're paired up with a professional, and they're, you know, and for me, like being a mentor to a lot of like immigrants and people in the Bronx and high school students, like it's given me so much joy, right? So I'm very passionate about this. What advice would you give to people who that are considering, you know, adopting, but doesn't even know where to start? Like they're like afraid, or they don't even know, you know, what that experience is like.
I mean, just to be totally honest with you, it'll show you my lack of education on my end as well. Even as an adoptee, I would just say, just go online and start Googling it. I mean, I know it's a terrible answer, but really just taking the first step to see like what organizations, like the one that you volunteer with, exist. Yeah. And I think that's what's going to put you around people who are kind of like-minded, and then you can, you know, expand your worldview in that sense, in terms of like what adoption means. But yeah. I don't have a good answer. I don't know what the organizations are that you should go check out.
Sorry, and meant more in like, so you mentioned that like, people like are asking like the wrong questions when they kind of, I guess I kind of heard that like people are asking you like the questions that you want to hear. Like, what questions like would you want them to ask and be curious about, instead of like you said, like some of like the other ones that you mentioned?
I feel like, as opposed to saying like, do you miss your birth parents, like you can leave it more open-ended, right? I mean, we're in sales, like keep it open-ended.
Yeah.
What has been your experience? And then that gives me the control to take the conversation to wherever I want based on my comfort level in discussing it.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely been something that's changed over time. Also depends on who I'm talking with. But I think that's a great one. Just like, what's your experience been like?
Right. Because the other way, it kind of like seems a little bit more like judgmental, right? Versus like just genuine curiosity. Like, hey, like, you know, obviously, like I haven't had that experience. Like, would love to learn a little bit more about like, you know, your world and your worldview and how, you know. And I think that it's like a more genuine place versus like a kind of like a weird place to come from.
Yeah. And all that being said, like, I totally get it in terms of coming, you know, asking like, do you miss your parents? Because I think it comes from a good intention, like it has good intentions behind it. But it's maybe just like reframing that, if you can reflect on it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like in sales, like our job is literally that, right? It's like we're reframing like things in a way that's like empowering, supportive, instead of like, you know, like I, like you said, like the more pushy sales, like the traditional way that's like, oh, manipulation, right? It's more like, Well, no, by asking the right questions, like I'm helping people come up with a realization that they might not have had otherwise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree with you.
But yeah, so like, tell me a little bit more about like being a musician and like, I guess like what were some of like the coolest places that you traveled to?
it's definitely not glamorous. So it's almost funny that you're asking me like, what are the coolest places you've traveled to? I think that's like almost saved for like musicians who have quote unquote made it. I think the definition of what a musician is has also changed over the years, especially, I don't know, like with the dawn of like the music producer and everyone can literally make an album on their laptop. But I've always felt more comfortable on the production side of things. Done a few gigs here and there. Like back when I was like in Florida, I flew out to Boston for a show. I think I had like two people in the audience. I got paid for the gig. That was pretty cool. Got to see my name on a poster. I just think everyone's journey in music's a little bit different. I know my own. I was definitely naive in terms of what it takes to be a musician. And like I have, like I said, I have a partner, and it's really just in terms of like, where do you want to prioritize your life? And I definitely have had like imbalances when I go full into music. And I knew, you know, I didn't want to be the guy who was like working two jobs, gigging every night, and then, you know, never coming home to my family. Maybe that works for some people, and I really commend them. But I found kind of like an interesting balance where like I'm holding down this sales job, but then I still work on music at night. In like a weird way, it's been liberating because I'm not stressing out about bills all the time. Another just harsh reality of being a musician.
Yeah, I think you can be your most true creative self if you have that security, like you said, of like knowing that, okay, I'll still have a roof over my head. Like I can pay the bills. I'm not living like paycheck to paycheck. Right. Like that inspires more creativity than like, I mean, I would think so. Right. But maybe some would argue that like when you're down in the dumps and you're at your lowest is also like a spark of inspiration as well, like creative inspiration as well.
Yeah. I think both are equally valid in that sense. Right. I think some of the greatest music is born out of struggle. But just, you know, for my own experience, I grew up fairly privileged. You know, I went to Boston College. I went to a private school. So that messaging or my story, it hadn't evolved yet. So like for me, working in retail, like, you know, being check to check, that's kind of was my example of struggle. And I know that kind of pales in comparison to a lot of people, but it was still something that I had to go through, to kind of grow as a person.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the reason why I started the podcast and started the book and all this stuff is because of like the more traumatic and like all the pain that I've gone through. Right. I don't think I wouldn't have like a big enough motive to like want to like help inspire others, you know, and things like that. If I had like a more traditional upbringing, because I feel like I just wouldn't be called to it. Whereas now, like I was like, no, I need more people, specifically like Asian men, just because that's like the demographic that, you know, that I am a part of, and how it's create this beautiful life where I can buy a house and just get married and, you know, just bought a new car and all that. Like, I think it's beautiful, right? Because like you, I was serving tables, like I was working, like I was basically paycheck to paycheck most of my life, right? And then I stumbled upon this like beautiful opportunity, and now like I have this incredible future, right? Which I think is just cool. And then like you said, the sales fulfills like certain aspects of my life, and then I still have time to do all these cool things like the podcast and the book and, you know, another book and stuff. So I just think it's cool. Like I think sales just provides you to have whatever life you want, and it's like a good foundation for you.
Definitely. And I'm so thankful that you've kind of just created the space. You know, it's obviously for everyone, but specifically, you know, trying to change like the perspective about like Asian masculinity. I think, you know, going back to like the creative discussion also just shows you how small that circle is. I mean, there's no one that I can think of who's doing what you're doing. And really that's kind of what brought us together. So that's also one of the reasons why I still love music. And that, you know, of course people seem like celebrities and they seem, you know, out of reach, when in reality, the music community is very tight knit. And that's just one of my favorite things about it.
Yeah. And I think like what music, honestly, is probably like one of the very few things that can connect like so many people together, right? Like when I go to like a EDM festival and just being so connected to the thousands of people, like it's rare to feel that like almost spiritual like vibration where like it's so weird, but sometimes like when I'm there, I'm like, wow, this is like the perfect moment. Like I just feel so present, so connected. And I feel like there's not that many other things that has that pull on people like that.
Yeah, well, especially today. I mean, like we were saying, like the information age, I think, has definitely left us more disconnected, ironically. Yeah. And so hopefully we can get back to concerts soon enough. But I definitely think that music is a great communal thing that brings us together.
Yeah, I think technology can be both, right? It can be good, like it connected us, obviously, which, you know, we're thousands of miles away, which is great. But yeah, I would say for the most part, it's also made us like only see certain aspects, like the polished, like the PR version of ourselves. And that's disingenuous because, you know, like people that actually know me or you or whoever, like it doesn't only look like rainbows and butterflies all the time. It's like, there's a lot of pain and sorrow and there's a lot of other emotions other than like, oh, this is, you know, when I got my promotion or this, which is great. I think it's great to celebrate that. But there's also like the other half of our lives that we don't share with others, like through social media.
Yeah. And I think to that point, I think it's really great or all the more reason why like these conversations are important. You know, obviously podcasting is a huge thing nowadays, but usually those podcasters like Joe Rogan, they're still celebrities, right?
Yeah.
And I think they can still have a profound impact on people. I mean, of course, I listen to them as well. But I think, you know, being able to listen to a podcast like this where we're just two regular guys, you know, just, you know, being vulnerable here, I feel like that might inspire other people to just be a little bit more open.
Exactly. You read my mind. That's exactly why I started this, because it was like, all right, I can listen to Elon Musk, but like, how many similarities do we really have? Like, am I going to be the next Elon Musk? Probably not, you know, as much as I would like to be. But like when other dudes, like maybe 21 year olds right out of college, and they're like, dude, I have no idea what I want to do. Like, I think my mom wants me to do this, but I don't want to do that. Like, they can listen and be like, crap, like maybe I should get into sales, you know?
That's the goal. 100%.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing. What would love to learn like a little bit more about like how you think being like when during your musician days, like how you think that actually has helped you become a better like sales professional.
Yeah, so I mean, in a couple of ways. So stage presence, I feel like is like an obvious one. So like from an early age, like I would do like all the talent shows, right? And so I feel like, especially in this new age of video prospecting, I really just feel pretty comfortable just shooting my shot and just going for it. I mean, worst case scenario, they laugh at you and it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
I feel like it's tied in that way. I've done a couple prospecting videos where like I play guitar, not seeing too much success there. Maybe that's a sign in itself. And then I think kind of just going back to my work life in terms of trying to make it as a musician, that really just humbled me in the sense of like, you still have to show up day in, day out, regardless of what your job is. And that's super important in sales.
Yeah. I do think like the mark of a great musician or producer or whatever it is, like, it's like that consistency over time. And then that not giving up on your dreams, despite all the no's and despite, like you said, the two person turnouts, right? It's like, if you just stick with it, like with anything in life, and you're committed and you're not like, you know, like you're passionate about it, like eventually things will come your way, right? And I think that's very similar within sales, where like there's gonna be like some no's, there's gonna be some days you're like, oh my god, like I really don't feel like making 10 calls before 10 o'clock, but you know, I know that, hey, like this is offering this life where at night I can, you know, whatever it is, like whether it's like travel to a different city, and you know, it offers you that life where it's like, okay, like it's giving me so much because you know, I'm like committed to my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also think that, you know, there's a saying in music that like a one-hit wonder is usually 5 years in the making. And it's kind of this idea of like chasing an ever elusive goal. I know there's a lot of musicians who don't actually break out till like they're in their 40s. But you know, as someone who's in their mid 20s, that's like pretty daunting. It's like, so what's going to be my life for the next 10 years? And I think tying it back to sales, it's like nothing is ever certain in terms of like trying to chase that quota. So it's really just, you know, dialing in your process, and that's what's going to get you there.
That's a really great and really insightful reflection. Cause I feel the same way. Like there's been so many moments where I was like, is this the career for me? Like, I think I'm not good. And I've been told that like, hey, maybe you should switch out of sales. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel very blessed that like now I can, and I wouldn't say I've made it, but I feel confident in my abilities because like you said, all the man hours, the work, all the reading, all the, like the studying, that I'll be okay. You know, like I'm definitely not worried anymore. Like if I'm good in sales, cause I know like I've built such a strong foundation that even if I have a bad year, like I know at the core, like I'll be fine, you know?
So I have a question on that. You had mentioned that there were maybe a few points where you're like, I'm not sure if sales is right for me. Can you maybe tell me a little bit more about like one or two of those instances? And like, was there someone who really helped like reframe your perspective as to like why you should stay in sales?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, exactly. There have been times where I've had like a really bad quarter, you know, where maybe I was like 60% of my number or whatever. And I was just like, dude, like, I'm just not good at this thing called sales. And then they're like, whoa. Okay, like, let's look at the facts. Like, let's get some elevation. Like, you're definitely stuck in the muck, in the mud, right? They're like, you won the best discovery, the best demo. Like, you won 8 out of this 8 weeks spiff, or 5 out of the 8 weeks spiff. Like, no, like don't say that about yourself. Like, that's simply not true, you know? So yeah, I've had mentors that like were like really like slapped me around and was like, dude, like stop being stupid. Like that, you know. But yeah, I mean, there I think it never goes away, right? Like there's been times where I'm just like, oh, like at the cusp of like getting promoted. And then someone else gets promoted over me. And I'm just like, maybe like I should do something that I'm better at, you know? So yeah, I think it never goes, because like I think in sales, it's like it's just so competitive, right? Like similar to being a musician, like maybe you made Billboard's like top 50 like once or twice, but like are you going to be that long lasting like person that like, you know, 30 years down the line, like people will still listen to you and will still be inspired? It's like I feel like that's the same with sales. Like I can have all this impact and I can mentor all these people, but like will I be that person that like the first person someone will call whenever they get a new job offer, or when they get this amazing job offer and they're like, hey Davidson, like I really value your opinion, like would you be open to kind of like talking this out with me? Like that for me, like that's why I always strive to get better every day, because I want to be that person that with so many others have been generous enough to like slap me around when I was like, hey, I think I'm gonna pursue something else, you know?
I mean, I feel like that's another one of the beauties of sales, and also similar to music, is that everyone kind of has a different motive for like why they're trying to succeed. You know, being on the Billboard 100 is a huge accomplishment. But for the longest time, that's like all I wanted. Like I wanted to sell out arenas and be on like top 100. Whereas like, you know, as your taste in music evolves, you learn a little bit more about how things work behind the scenes in the music industry. You recognize that you don't necessarily need that validation to be a successful musician. If that's what you aspire towards, like that's great. But I think in the same thing with sales, like there are some people who they want to be number one every single month. And maybe that works for them. It doesn't work for me. Cause I know like when I'm looking at how I'm doing versus everyone else, kind of makes me feel bad about myself if I'm behind. So maybe someday I'll be like that, but definitely not. I try to focus on like myself, my process, and celebrating what wins that I have.
Exactly. I think it starts with that, right? Once you're totally it's ironic because similar, I'm sure music is the same way, but once it comes from a place of just genuine, like, I'm so passionate about this, that's actually what will actually sell out the arenas versus like, I think this is what will make it based on the trends and the patterns of like the ones that have made it to the Billboard 100, right? So I guess the version of sales of my version of that was like, I like tried to copy all like the sales folks that made like 500,000, 300, like 250, 800, like K, right? And I just kept trying to be like them, and like it just doesn't work because this is not me. Like I'm not aggressive. I'm not like super confident. I don't have this like crazy executive presence, right? So for me, like I learned that like, okay, like I'm a relationship guy, like I'm likable, you know, I'm like someone who's like that, you know, so I just doubled down into who I was. And then I was able to hit like 400% of my number, right? One quarter, right? So I think that took a while, but easier said than done.
Yeah, I mean, hey, good for you. I'm still trying to find my voice in sales for sure. But you reminded me, I'm doing a master class right now with Tom Morello to learn guitar. And literally on like the first lesson, he says, if you want to learn how to play like me, like this lesson will teach you that. But if you want to learn how to find your own voice on the guitar, this lesson will also teach you that. He's like, everyone can learn every scale, practice countless hours, and they can emulate all the greatest guitar players. But really what you should aspire towards is finding your own voice.
Yeah, that's dope. Yeah, I think easier said than done, right? I think so many of us, it's hard to not be influenced by others, right? Like there's people we can model that behavior off of. Like there's like I'm sure there's like processes and systems and things you can kind of take from other people. But it's like you have to Frankenstein that into your own version, right? So it's like I'm inspired by like Zach or all Andy or Bree or all these amazing people, right? But at the core, I know that like what makes me unique is like, you know, I'm really good at writing like thank you notes after when I close a deal with a client. They feel like or writing LinkedIn recommendations for my clients, like they feel very grateful that, you know, I was able to see them in that way for who they are, you know. And I think like learning that is tough. And I think at a young age, it's tough to do that sometimes because it's hard to not look at, like you said, the leaderboards and like try to copy them, you know.
Yeah, I just think it comes with time, like anything.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Liam. Like this has been a really cool conversation. I hope if you are aspiring to be in tech sales and you want to reach out to any of us, I'll definitely include everyone's like contact information. But yeah, man, thanks for your contributions to the world. And yeah, I'm excited to see your journey and excited to see what you continue to create, not only as a musician, as a professional, but just in general, like definitely could see you continue to create a lot of impact in the world.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me again. Like I said, it was an honor. I know the conversation was kind of all over the place from music back to sales, back to music, but you know, it was really an enjoyable experience. This is my first podcast, so I'm sure it showed.
Nah, you're good, man. Like you said, like you have presence, like stage presence, and it shows because, yeah, I mean, like you said, I do think there's something about, so one of the top salesperson at one of my previous companies was a musician and he owned it. Like he was killing it, like you said, because he was so confident and we sold to hedge fund managers that were like, I don't even think he got a college degree, but meeting with like MIT, Harvard, Yale, like MBAs all day, like he owned it, right? Whereas like I was literally like a coward. Like I was just like, I felt so insecure, right? But so, you know, there's something to be said about that for sure.
Yeah, there's hope for me still, it sounds like.
Yeah, you'll be all right, man. Definitely not worried.
All right, well, thanks again, Davidson.
Take care.